Judge Cochran, Judge Johnson, Judge Wooten, the Honorable Judge Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good afternoon. You can go ahead and be seated. Can you hear us okay?
Yes.
Okay, and are both parties there?
Yes.
Okay, we can only see one party. So will the camera move after appellant presents appellant's argument? Oh, they'll come up to the podium. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, we are here for an ITV oral argument in case A19-0557 in the application of David G. Shaden and Vicki L. Shaden and Paul S. Mickelson and Ann M. Mickelson for the vacation of a portion of Highland Avenue in the plat of Pine Knoll on Kebekona. The appellant will have 15 minutes for oral argument. Respondent will then have 15 minutes, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. If at any time you have trouble hearing us, please let me know. And if you can proceed when you're ready, appellant, if you can please introduce yourself for the record at the start of the argument, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. Duransky. Can the court hear me all right at this point?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My name is John Valen, V-A-L-E-N. I represent Paul and Ann Mickelson in this matter, and we are the appellants. This appeal is from an order in one district court case, but it really involves two cases, and either one of those I don't think can be analyzed without reference to the other. This appeal is in what I will call the Jaden, T-J-A-D-E-N case, although the Jadens are no longer parties in the matter. That's the actual street vacation case that began back in 2016. And I'll refer to the other case as the Casper case, since the Caspers were the plaintiffs in that case, which originated in 2017. If I may, I would like to call the court's attention first to page one of the addendum in my brief, which is basically a photo of the plat in question. The plat is called Pine Knoll on Kebekona. It shows running northwest to southeast Highland Avenue, which is part of that street that is in question here. To the left side, it shows block 2 and the numbered lots 1 through 11. The Mickelsons owned lots 7 and part of 6. The Caspers owned lot 8 and part of lot 9. That plat, although it is difficult to read with a magnifying glass, you can see that the plat itself is, did most all plats back in the 20s, dedicate the streets, including Highland Avenue, to public use. So Highland Avenue is a street that's been dedicated to the public, dedicated by plat, which is one of the many ways that town roads are created in Minnesota. On the theory that a picture is worth a thousand words, I would like to try to show the court a blow-up of page 2 of my addendum, which is a satellite photo essentially showing the same plat. And is that visible to the court?
It is, yes.
Okay. Could I just ask, is this the same one that's in the addendum? This plat?
Page 2.
Okay, thank you.
However, I have drawn with a pink pen a line alongside the lots 7 and 8 to show where the original lot lines were prior to the vacation of Highland Avenue. Those lots now show lots 6, 7, 8, and 9 is extending up to the center line of what was Highland Avenue and now vacated. The dark line along the top here is the private easement, which benefits both the Caspers and the Mickelsons and is their way out to the public roadway. Again, for reference, the photo shows the Casper driveway, which is the root of the appeal here, running across the western side of the Mickelson tract in about that location.
Sir, is that a black line, the driveway?
The public easement is out here. The driveway shows kind of a yellow root in there. It's a gravel driveway, and that's how it shows up in the photograph.
Is it to the west of 28283? Is that where it is? Or where?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That little dot with 2823 is right in the middle that driveway.
Okay.
What about 28285?
Well, that looks like, and I don't know what those dots represent, frankly, but that's a little bit south of the driveway. The driveway itself runs from approximately the western corner of what was vacated and granted to the Mickelsons in an easterly direction. Now, the doctor did Minnesota for more than a century.
Okay, I want to stop you one more time because so I see a line that's horizontal, parallel to Highland Avenue. That's between lots 6, 7, 8, and 9 to the southwest and block 3 to the northeast. I'm wondering if that line is the center line of the road or if it's the southwest edge of the road or the northeast edge of the road or what?
Well, I don't know if you can see the end of my pointer here, but the old center line of Highland Avenue before it was vacated is this red line that runs northwest to southeast. And Highland Avenue is written right under it there.
I can't see that on your map that you're holding up. So that's not printed on the map at addendum page 2, I take it?
It is. It is printed.
Here, and then you can see Highland Avenue here.
But where's the
that
driveway?
That was my question. Is that the center line or is that something else?
That's the center line right above the word Highland Avenue.
Okay, so then what the land that the Mickelsons obtained with the 2016 vacation order would be to the southwest of that red line, correct?
That's correct. And the driveway in question runs basically east and west from the western corner of that parcel acquired by Mickelsons, straight east and through the dot that has the number 288. 28283.
Okay, so I think I understand then that the driveway kind of clips that corner at a 45-degree angle, sort of.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
So this coloring that looks like kind of a light brown color, that's the driveway? That's the Casper's driveway?
It's a gravel driveway, yes.
All right.
And it runs out to the black line out there that is private easement. Any other questions on that at this point?
And do we have anything in the record about how much property is involved here? I mean, how much are we talking about here? We're talking about that corner, right, of 19390166, 1600, right? It's the corner of that lot. Am I correct?
From the corner of that lot to the old center line of Highland Avenue is 30 feet.
So we're talking about 30 feet in that corner. 30 feet from... I mean, do you know? I mean, I'm just asking, is there something in the record that indicates how much property we're talking about here?
Well, the plat at page 1 Highland Avenue is 60 feet wide. So the center, to the, from the old property lines here to the center line is 30 feet. So this rectangle is 30 feet by 110 feet, which is the width of the Mickelson lot. Is that making sense?
Yes. Yeah, it does. Thank you.
All right. Now, that 30 feet by 110 feet in the original vacation order was granted to the Mickelsons up to the center line. Casper's, of course, acquired the same title to the rectangle that's in front of their lot up to the center line. The law in Minnesota, for more than a century, and this is in the Adams case and the Lamb cases that I cited on pages 14 and 15 of my brief, is that the owner of the abutting lot actually owns fee title up to the center line, subject to the dedication to the public. And independent of that fee title, under those two cases, the owner of the abutting lot also has an easement over that property for air and light. And that fee title and that easement is superior to the rights of any other landowner and anyone else other than the public, which has the easement.
Could I ask you this, though? I mean, is there any dispute in this case that this driveway was used for more than 15 years by the Caspers?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't, but in the...
I don't understand your answer. When you say it wasn't, or was there a dispute about that?
It may well have been used for more than 15 years, but you cannot in Minnesota acquire a prescriptive easement or property by adverse possession over land that's dedicated to the public. So whether it was used for 15 years or 30 years is of no consequence. The court of the other case ruled on that and dismissed Casper's complaint based upon adverse possession under that statute that prohibits acquiring property that is dedicated to public use. So my point is that this rectangle over which the Casper driveway runs was something in which Mickelson's owned the underlying fee. It also had an easement for air and light. The Caspers, not being abutting to that part, had no property right in that parcel at all. So after the court vacated that street in 2016, December of 2016, granting title to the Mickelsons to that 30-foot by 110-foot parcel. The next spring, the Mickelsons requested Caspers to remove their driveway from that, which, if I could show you the map again, would have been a pretty simple thing to do. They could run their driveway northwest straight up to that public easement without any difficulty. But
it would be expensive, though, correct?
Pardon me?
It would be expensive to do so.
There's no evidence in the record of that. I would guess it would cost about $100 to put a load of classified gravel on that 30-foot strip. So I don't know how it could be called expensive to do that. The following spring, in the spring of 2017, Mickelson's requested that they stop using that driveway and use their own property as a driveway. They responded by filing a complaint seeking title to the driveway over the Mickelson property by adverse possession. On summary judgment, that their complaint was dismissed. Judge Rasmussen citing the statute that says you cannot acquire property by adverse possession or prescription over property that is dedicated to the public. However, in granting that summary judgment motion, the memo of the court, which is on page 33 of my addendum, says that there should be no need for further litigation. The parties should simply make a motion in this Jayden case to construe its order or interpret its judgment, I think is the way the court put it. addendum, it says, the determinative issue involves the construction or interpretation of the December judgment. The parties simply need to bring a motion requesting the court to construe that order. Well, that we didn't feel that there was anything ambiguous about that order, but this was our direction. So both parties filed motions to bring this Jayden case back into play. And as a result of those motions, the court made its order, which is in the addendum on page 35. And that order goes way beyond interpreting the judgment or construing the judgment. It's almost bizarre. It vacates the 2016 order insofar as it relates to this 30-foot by 110-foot parcel, which has the effect of dedicating that for public use, even though it's surrounded by private land. It says that the Mickelsons cannot interfere with the use of the Casper driveway over that, even though the court in the other case has indicated Caspers have no right to that because adverse possession does not apply. It's just a very strange order, and that's the order that this court should vacate.
But didn't the court base its determination on the basis that the order itself indicates that no one is to be damaged by this vacation, and that this order did in fact, contrary to its terms, damage the Caspers, and therefore for that reason the court found a need to vacate the order investing this property into the Mickelsons.
Well, I spent some time in my brief outlining the concept of damages in this kind of a case, going back to the Hull case. Inconvenience is not the same as damages. You cannot suffer damages for the loss of a driveway that you had no right to put there in the first place. It is our theory there. I mean, my brief outlines
well,
a number of reasons why the court could not do what it did. Damages is one of them.
Why do you say that they could not put it there in the first place? I mean, it was a public street. Could they not drive on a public street?
Well, they could put it there, but there's no legal right to have it there. The underlying fee to that parcel belongs to Mickelson.
Well, I mean, not until 2016, but then after the district court's order in 2018, it does not, of course, and that's the order on appeal.
Well, they did own fee title of that property prior to this order.
No, I know, from 2016 to 2018, I understand.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they owned it prior to that because of the principle in the Adam and Lamb case that I have outlined in my brief.
Do you know, can I ask a question?
Sure, go.
I mean, I had a great deal of difficulty in looking at the maps that you provided, and they're not very clear. Is the map that the blow-up map you have there, was that showing the lines after the vacation of the Highland Avenue Road?
Yes. It shows that all of these lots, but including 6, 7, 8, 9, which are owned by these parties, now extend up to the center line of what was Highland Avenue.
Well, but when we look at these red lines, that's where the Mickelsons think that the lines should be after the vacation of Highland. Am I correct? I just want to understand what this is.
It isn't what they think it should be. It's what the court ordered in the December 2016 order that Mickelson's owned up to that center line.
All right. So that the red line where it is now, how is that How does that relate to Highland, where it's shown on this exhibit?
The red line is the old center line of Highland Avenue prior to its vacation.
Okay. All right. All right.
The order of December 16 gives Mickelson's ownership up to that center line.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Well, for all of the reasons that I outlined in my brief, it's my opinion that the court simply had no authority to enter that kind of an order. It's outside the time limits of Rule 60.02.
Excuse me, I have one further question for you. When you were before the district court on this question, did you argue that the court did not have authority to amend the order? The 2016 order?
The court ordered us to file motions for the court to interpret or construe the order of December 2016. My argument was that it didn't need interpretation or construction. It was clear on its face.
But you didn't argue that the court lacked authority to construe that order?
No, the court can construe it, but if it needed it, it didn't need it. What the court did was drastically amended and vacated it, and there was no motion in front of the court to do that, and so I probably did not argue that. I couldn't imagine the court would do such a thing.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? All right, thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Valen, litigants, may it please the court, my name is George Duransky and I represent the Caspers in this litigation. I'm going to try to point out a little bit of the history of this matter because I think it's important. I will reference both of these two cases. I don't agree with Mr. Valen that the case preceding this, which was brought in district court, is necessarily done at this point. We reached a point, however, where the judge directed us to basically file motions to clarify the vacation order. That vacation order was entered not by virtue of the Mickelsons seeking vacation of that road. Initially, that's what it was, but then everybody else joined in. There was talk around the neighborhood, and people came to the conclusions, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's vacate that road because maybe somebody is going to use it someday. That, when I first saw this case, I handled the appeal. I didn't handle the original motions or the effort to vacate the road. And when I first saw it, I thought, why did anybody move to vacate that road? And the reasons that came out of the litigation were basically because somebody might want to use it someday. The road was there since the plat was dedicated back in the early part of the last century. It really never turned into a road. It was never maintained by the county. There was never gravel put on it. It wasn't plowed. It wasn't mowed. It wasn't anything. And it didn't go to the lake. And it didn't go to any campsites or any other places that would be commonly used. So I really wondered, why was that vacation started in the first place? And that question has really never been completely answered. But all of the parties decided to pitch in and pay proportionate shares of the litigation to have the road vacated, and that's what they did. They hired an attorney in Park Rapids, and she brought the action, and included in the final orders of that issue, which was never disputed by anyone, was the language that this is not going to hurt or harm any person whatsoever. And Mr. Valen, at various times in this litigation, has said, well, that's just standard language that appears in a lot of these kinds of proceedings. And I can see that language is language which comes along with orders in vacation actions for roads. But that doesn't mean that those roads and the vacation of those roads don't have meaning and consequence. There's been a dispute throughout all of this litigation as to whether or not the Mickelsons had any superior knowledge. And I say that because there was circumstantial evidence. As soon as the vacation order was entered and as soon as the appeal time lapsed, the Mickelsons commissioned a survey and then sent a letter immediately following that to the Casper saying, get off our land, move your driveway. That letter came from Mr. Vail and it's part of the record, part of the exhibits of the court. I don't know whether that is circumstantial evidence of any superior knowledge or not, but it certainly is suspicious. And I can only use the words of Thoreau, who was living on Walden Pond, went to a meeting, and that meeting was discussing some angry citizens who felt like their milk was being watered down by the dairy farmers in the area. And he said, well, it's only circumstantial, but finding a trout in your milk is pretty good circumstantial evidence. And circumstantial evidence is recognized by courts as well. The other thing is the Mickelsons essentially were happy to take money from everybody to participate in this action, and they all shared the attorney's fees. And all was well until immediately after the vacation order was entered. And then all of a sudden, here comes this information forward, you're on our land, you're on our driveway, move your driveway. Well, it's not a driveway only, it's on driveway and a drain field. In addition to that, there's testimony and affidavits and estimates as to moving the driveway and the cost of those in the records. And it's not $100 and a load of gravel. In addition to that, the driveway has to be moved in such a way that it would go up a higher hill, which means ice and snow in the winter and coming up to the top of the hill beside your house is very difficult. So that's part of the problem. Now, maybe we should have seen this ourselves, and maybe we should have gotten on with the litigation in the context of the vacation action. But the judge pointed the way to this. He said, look, I can fix this real easy. Just file a motion to clarify the order that we entered in the vacation action, and I'll work on that. And both of us filed motions. And we were actually kind of happy to have some direction in the file at that point, because he kind of pointed the way to how this could be solved and taken care of. And he also went out, as he indicates on the record in the transcripts, and viewed this property himself to look at it, to see exactly what would be involved. And then he entered an order. And in that order, he said, I'm going to preserve the vacation action, but I'm not going to allow one party to benefit against another party, because that wasn't anticipated, and it goes against the language which was in the order, which I signed, not knowing that one party would suffer a consequence and the other party would suffer a gain, or would obtain a gain. And so the judge made a very practical, maintaining most of the entire prior order, and yet protecting the Caspers from losing a portion of their driveway. And when this matter then comes before the court, Mr. Vailen presents the argument that, well, the statute of limitations had run on the order under the rule. First, read that order of Judge Rasmussen carefully, because Judge Rasmussen never references the rule, Rule 60.02, when he grants relief in this case. He doesn't talk about Subdivision A or Subdivision B or Subdivision F or any of the subdivisions. In fact, he doesn't even mention the rule. He just makes the correction and fixes it.
Mr. Duransky? If Rule 60.02 was not the basis, the legal basis for the judge's order in 2018, what was the legal basis?
In 2018?
Well, yeah.
You mean in the original vacation action?
No.
You're talking about
the order that's on appeal.
I'm sure that 60.02 is the basis for the judge making the change and entering the order, essentially setting up a situation where the Caspers don't lose their driveway. But what Mr. Vail has tried to suggest is there's a one-year statute of limitations. Because the judge used the word misrepresent in the footnote to that order, and he suggests means that that had to be under subdivision C of that particular rule. But that is not necessarily the case. Subdivision C says fraud, whether heretofore denominated intrinsic or extrinsic, misrepresentation or other misconduct of an adverse party. Nobody is suggesting that there's adverse party misrepresentation that is essentially a misconduct in this case. Really, what this is probably a situation, because he didn't buy my circumstantial evidence argument, that he doesn't necessarily say the Mickelsons knew of this and were essentially pursuing a part of land that they weren't otherwise entitled to. But he goes ahead and makes the determination under 6002, but at no time does he pin himself to subdivision C, and as a result of that, he doesn't ever bring himself under the rule of must be filed within 1 year.
Wouldn't it, if it's not, counsel, excuse me,
yes.
If it's not under C, would it be under A because it was based on a mistake?
It could have been under A. It also could have been under F for any other reason justifying relief from the operation of the judgment. I mean, this is a very broad rule, and it's been interpreted rather broadly also.
What would be the other reason?
Because one party benefited over the other party and took some land away, contrary to the statement in the judgment originally entered, vacating the road, that no one would be hurt by this. I mean, that is obvious. I think that, you know, I mean, if you're familiar with Lakeshore property, it's very valuable, and people who own it take it very personally, and it becomes something that's very much a part of their life. It's where they go for relief. It's where they go for peace. It's where they go to retire. It's where they go for recreation. It becomes a very central theme in somebody's life. And when a driveway, which has been in use for over 50 years, is suddenly, you're told, oh, your neighbor owns your driveway, you'll have to spend, whether it's $25,000 or $100,000 or whatever it is, it's a lot of money to fix that. And it becomes an economic issue when you're faced with something like that, particularly when you feel like you've really been had. And the reason you feel like you've really been had is because you find out that you participated in litigation, you used the same attorney, you went to court, you all supported the same relief to vacate that road, and now you find out that, oh, this has consequences to me. I didn't know that. Now I feel like I've really been taken advantage of. Not only did I lose part of my driveway, but I paid the cost of having to lose part of my driveway. And that's exactly the way the Caspers feel with this thing. It's become a very emotional and a very personal issue. And it's very significant to them, and obviously that's pretty important. I want to go back to the order of the judge just for a moment, because the judge says in his footnote, the court believes this misrepresentation was an innocent mistake and not the result of fraud or bad faith. Now, Mr. Balin has seized on that word, misrepresentation, and said, well, that means that as a misrepresentation, it has to fall under subdivision C of 60.02. But I beg to differ, and the differing really comes from the standpoint of what does C say? It says fraud, misrepresentation, or other misconduct of an adverse party, or other misconduct of an adverse party. We don't know that there was misrepresentation. We don't know that there was misconduct. We don't know that there was any fraud. We just know that the judge signed an order in this case that said nobody's going to be hurt by this. Everything's going to be okay. This is just a routine piece of default business coming across my desk. It's been signed off by the lawyers. It's been signed off on all by the adjoining landowners. They've all participated in this. I'm safe in signing this. He signs it, and then he finds out later on in the first piece of litigation, that isn't what happened. There were real serious consequences of that order. And so the judge, I think, after becoming frustrated with the litigants and probably with counsel and raising all sorts of arguments about the history of the state of Minnesota and what constituted a dedicated road and whether is go back in the original vacation action, make some motions, and then straighten out the problem so nobody gets hurt, and so that the findings that I've made about nobody's going to be harmed by this are actually made to be truthful. And that's what I think the judge did, and I think that's how he went through with this. I think it makes perfect sense. I'm sure that the Mickelsons are unhappy that they're not able to take part of the Casper property, but that's too bad. I don't think the law permits them to do that, and I think the action which they drove to the courts and gathered up other people to be involved in shows that they had a motive that was beyond what we ended up with as a result in the litigation. There is no reason. The loss to the Mickelsons of the little piece of driveway that the Caspers own is minuscule.
Well, what are we talking about? What? How much property are we talking about? I'm trying to get a handle on what exactly is involved here.
We're talking about a piece that's probably about 30 feet long. It's triangularly shaped, so you could make say it's 30 feet on each of the three sides. I mean, it's that's as best I can give you an estimate based on this. But it's not an inconsequential piece of property. It's not something the size of a paper plate. It's something that's considerably larger than that, and it also takes out some landscaping that is involved. It takes out some driveway. It takes out part of a drain field. It does all of those things, and that's all delineated in the statements where we make some estimates, and there are affidavits filed to support that as to how much it would cost to do these various changes to the property, and they're all pretty well laid out in the affidavits that we've presented to the trial judge.
Mr.
So, so in looking at the order, there's a legal description. Does that, in fact, describe the area of the roadway that they obtained, that they would have otherwise obtained under the prior vacation order? Well, I'm looking at the order, and there's a legal description there.
Paragraph one, yes, that's what describes it.
All right. So, but as I read this, so that entire parcel then would include the driveway, am I correct?
Yes.
And that's a smaller part.
The entire parcel would have included the driveway, yes. The judge doesn't vacate the other benefits to the Mickelsons. He only vacates the order, the pre-existing order, to the extent that it affected the Caspers.
It looks to me like the judge took away everything the Mickelsons gained in the 2016 order, did not just carve out the driveway from that rectangle, but rather basically, you know, undid the annexation, so to speak, of the of that part of the roadway to their property.
No, I don't believe that's correct, Your Honor. I think the judge was only taking away that portion of the vacation, which advantaged the Caspers. There's quite a bit of property.
Let me ask you, Mr. Duransky, let me ask you to compare on page 35 of your addendum, paragraph 1, compare that to the... I'm sorry. Appellant's addendum is what I meant to refer to. The addendum to the blue brief. So comparing page 35, paragraph 1, to page 18, the middle of the page. Isn't that the same? I'm doing it kind of quickly, but... Well, in the second on page 18 now, the second full paragraph.
This is the motion for amended findings that I'm looking at.
Page 18 of the addendum is Exhibit A to the 2016 order, and the exhibit contains the legal descriptions of the properties that are being awarded to all of the landowners.
I'm sorry, I'm just not following you, Your Honor. Maybe I'm not on the right thing.
Well, do you have the 2016 order? Do you have the 2016 order? Look at Exhibit A to the 2016 order. Well, are you on page 18 of the addendum or Exhibit A? So the second full paragraph describes the property to be vacated and vested in the Mickelsons, and there's a description. Isn't that description identical to the description in paragraph 1 of the 2018 order on page 35 of the addendum? Okay. Well, the question that Judge Hooten asked earlier is, I think you answered her question in a way of suggesting that the district court simply carved out the driveway from the Mickelsons' property. It seems like the district court's order, 2018 order, did more than that, correct? It completely reversed the 2016 order with respect to the Mickelsons.
As to what he's doing, and he's saying that he doesn't want any adverse effect on the Caspers in essence. Now, whether there's an error in the descriptions which he used in terms of accomplishing that or not, I don't know. I can't really answer that, but the memoranda indicates that the intent of the judge was to try to make the Caspers' driveway whole and essentially exempt that from the vacation of the land which the Mickelsons received previously.
I don't think the last paragraph of the memorandum is consistent with what you just said. It says that the award to the Mickelsons is set aside and void. The Mickelsons thus do not own that land.
That's correct, but then it goes on to say, and are prohibited from doing anything to obstruct or impair the Caspers' use of the driveway. I acknowledge that there's some lack of clarity there, but I think I understand what the judge intended to do. Now, whether the language that he used caused a problem or not, I don't know.
I'm done. Okay. I think that answers our questions. Thank you very much. Any rebuttal, Mr. Valen?
Yes, just briefly, if I may. Probably still holding your paperwork here. There you go. Frankly, I don't know how to dispel some of the fog that gets raised here. From the very beginning of this litigation, Mr. Duransky has accused my clients of fraud and having superior knowledge. Superior knowledge of what? I have no idea. Anybody who drove out there, who lives out there, knows where the driveways are located, knows where the lot lines are. There's no superior knowledge, there's no fraud, there's no motivation of the kind that Mr. Duransky talks about.
I think that issue is moot as to whether there's fraud, because the judge found there was no fraud. So I think we're wasting valuable time even talking about whether there's fraud. But there is misrepresentation, because the order that the judge vacated says that was a misrepresentation that no one would be damaged here, and the Caspers were damaged. Now, how is that finding clearly erroneous?
Because of the case that I cited in my brief that clearly holds that they were not damaged in the precise meaning of that term. Inconvenience.
But the order said they were not damaged as a result of the vacation of the highway.
Well, the
and damage is a precise term. It doesn't say that nobody will be hurt, nobody will be inconvenienced. Damages, I have to ask you to read the brief and the case that I have in there that talks about what does damage mean in this context. And if you apply that case law, they are not damaged. They were not damaged by this.
Mr. Valen, though, this is... The judge who issued this order is also the judge who issued the 2018 order, correct? The 2016 order
yes.
And the 2018 order were issued by the same
correct.
Judge. So the yes. judge has an understanding of what the judge meant by the term damage. And the judge is saying in the 2018 order that the finding of fact that it will not cause damage was erroneous.
And my point is the judge is wrong.
So you're saying the judge can't interpret his own order that he signed? Are you really arguing that to this court?
Well, the judge is saying
that
Caspers sustained damages here, and I'm saying that that's an erroneous conclusion on his part.
But you'll concede, will you not, that the Caspers cannot, if you're correct, the Caspers cannot use that driveway.
That's correct, and the inconvenience to them is that they will have to put a driveway on their own property, as everyone else does. And there's a talk now about a drain field. Well, I certainly hope they didn't put a drain field on a public right-of-way.
But they would have been better off with not agreeing to the vacation of the highway.
Yeah,
then if they have to spend money to put in whatever amount of money it is to put in a new driveway.
And that's an issue they should have raised back in 2016 when the application was served on them. They didn't do that. They talked to Sarah Swanson. My clients have never talked to Sarah Swanson. They talked to Sarah Swanson.
Didn't Sarah Swanson represent your clients?
Yes.
And you say they never talked to her?
Jayden's arranged for the representation of Sarah Swanson. My clients have never talked to her.
Okay, thank you.
The Caspers made inquiry of Sarah Swanson. They evidently didn't tell her where the driveway was. Those issues should have been raised back in 2016. They weren't. Based on the posture of the case at that point, the findings indicated that no one will be damaged by this.
But why wouldn't, I mean, if in fact there's a provision in there that says no one will be damaged, and the judge signed that, and the judge is understanding that no one would be damaged, why wouldn't the Caspers think that by signing this, we will not be damaged? I mean, is that, I guess I'm not understanding your argument. I mean, can't you rely on something that the attorney represents, that everyone agrees to, that the judge signs off on?
Not if it's wrong, and it happens to be wrong.
But that's not what it said. It said no one will be damaged, and they relied upon that.
That's a finding that was made because the application alleged that no one will be damaged. No one responded by saying, wrong, I will be damaged. And so that allegation gets carried over into the findings of the trial court. And the time, the judge says it was based upon a misrepresentation. Well, if it was, It's time barred by 60.02, which specifically talks about cases of misrepresentation.
But it also talks about misrepresentation or other misconduct by an adverse party, and you'll agree that the Caspers weren't an adverse party at the time the vacation petition was filed.
No, I don't think that language means anything in the context of this case. The judge said it was based on misrepresentation. 60.02 has misrepresentation as a grounds for relief, but it's time barred after 1 year.
I don't think there's any further questions. Thank you both for your arguments and for being available by ITV. We'll look carefully at the matter. It's submitted.
Thank you.